Hello and welcome to I Vow. This is the podcast program of Voices of Women. My name is Jenny Prisk and I'm the founder and president of Voices of Women, and truly delighted today to have with me in a conversation Pauline Dempers of Namibia. She has a painful story. She survived 3 years of imprisonment and torture in underground dungeons operated by the Southwest Africa People's Organization, or SWAPO, as it is commonly known. And this was the liberation movement that she had joined to fight for Namibian independence. She is now in residence at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego as one of four women peacemakers. Welcome to our conversation, Pauline.
Thank you.
You are here at the IPJ as a peacemaker. You have suffered a tremendous number of wrongs in your life. How Yes. can you be a peacemaker?
Well, that is exactly what led me to be the peacemaker, because the pain that I have experienced, the challenges that I had to go through had led me to that. It was a lesson for me, and it's a pain that I would never want to transfer or to do in a way of revenge to do any other person, including the perpetrator.
That takes an incredible kind of person to be able to think that way, because so many people instantly think of revenge. How can I get back? How can I make life worse for these people because they did that to me? Where did you learn those peacemaking attributes and qualities?
Well, growing up in the apartheid system, that was the divide and rule, and also seeing, I actually learned from my father, I can say, that in a very subtle way tried to protest the system that was there, because he would enter to places that were reserved for white people only and would be in trouble with the owners and also later on with the police. He was a teacher, but he would at times pretend like an ordinary man and go without a permit from the place where we are to maybe the capital. And there we will have a problem with the police. They will be rounded up like 4 o'clock in the morning, go to the police station, sleep over there, the whole family, and then be given the pass in the morning when the office is open. So he had this very subtle way of protesting the system, and that I was ashamed when we were sleeping at the police station and so on. But then when I asked him why he's not doing what is required to do, he was always telling me that it is not the South Africa's country. Namibia belongs to us, and they are not supposed to be treating us the way they are treating us. So I grew up with that understanding. And when you want something to be done, it's not always the aggressive way. And that is what I have learned from him, that you can do it also in a subtle way.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you've pursued throughout your life. So as a result of the torture and the imprisonment that you suffered, I know you have three children, right?
Yes.
And they have amazing names, and I want to hear those in a moment. But how did you rise up out of that situation to be doing the activist work that you're doing now?
When we were released from the prisons, and I mean, even from the dungeons, it was a life or death situation. And we had to kind of, life was important for us than to resist and die, which happened to, unfortunately, many of our people. So we had to play along. We had to continue to bear that label of being an enemy agent, whereas we are not, just to be able to come to the other side, to be released and to be safe back home. When we were released and when we met with the UN for the first time, that is when we break the silence. Mm-hmm. That is where we started to tell the truth of what happened to us. So it already started there. And when we came back from XLS, I said we had a choice, either do revenge, and believe me, there were people that were ready to assist us to do that. And again, it was something very painful, because we could, if you revenge, it's like reliving that same pain while passing it on to the other person. So it is by choice that I have decided that there is a way, and I wouldn't want to be a perpetrator, because if I do that, then there will be no difference between those who have pained me and us.
That's a wonderful attitude to take. So do you think that the Namibian government is listening to you? Because I know you have very strong connections. Do they listen to you with regard to recompense for those of you who were imprisoned and who were put through this torturous time?
Well, I wouldn't say in total that they listen to us, but from the work that we have done over the years, you know, first they were very aggressive. They would use the national television and intimidate us, especially when we launched the organization Breaking the Wall of Silence. And they would threaten us with war and so on. But of late, they have maybe changed of strategy, and they are kind of silent. They don't talk much. And but we have tried to engage them. And 2006... for the first time, we were invited to the State House to talk about what happened to us. Unfortunately, we did not meet the president, but the Minister of Presidential Affairs. We have left a statement which is still did not responded to. That president is now something of the past. We have a new president, and we will still continue to do that. And I think just a day before I came here, actually that very same Friday that I left the country, there was an article saying the presidency seeks the truth about the dungeons, which I responded from here. So
what did you say?
Well, they have started a project a month ago where they were engaging the families of the disappeared persons, of families of the people who did not come back from exile, actually, and including our people. And when I asked them, they were like they are just correcting the first book that they have released, accounting for those who did not come back from. So when I responded in my article, I said historical accountability is not about the headcount of who has come and who has not come. It is, and there should be a distinction of people who did not come back as a result of maybe combat and people who did not come back from the dungeons. There must be that distinction. And people should be honored in a way that they deserve. Families need to know the truth, and families also need to be respected, and we need to honor people and acknowledge that they were indeed part of the liberation struggle.
So you have three children, as I mentioned earlier. I'd love you to share their names, but also, are they involved in this movement with you because they, the breaking the walls, because they understand what you've been through?
Yes, they are. They are part of it. And when I go around doing this awareness raising and also engaging with families of the disappeared, I always go with my son. And he does the video recording for me. That's Victor. Victor was born on the 26th of August, and that is the day that is known as the Heroes Day. It was then known as the Swabo Day. So, and that was, I envisioned the independence of the country and the victory that we will have over the apartheid system. Wonderful. Therefore, the Victor.
Yes.
Survival was born in a very difficult and challenging time.
So Survival is a girl?
Survival is a girl.
It is a girl, yes.
And that was the time that before I was arrested, that was a time where people were really disappearing, like on daily basis. Mm. We did not know where these people were going, but from rumors we learned that they were going to the dungeons. And Survival's father and I planned to have a baby with the thinking that maybe I will survive these disappearances that are happening. And if not, maybe she will survive, or he, because we did not know then, and will be able to tell the story. So that's how we named her Survival.
Mm-hmm.
Survival's father, Survival and Victor's father, is also one of the disappeared. Inosia is the one that...
This is another girl,
mm-hmm. my last born.
Mm-hmm.
And her name derives from depicting our innocence. Because the father of Inosia is also one of the ex-Tidenis. Mm. So therefore, Inosia.
Oh, Inosia. So that, yes, they're very aptly named. And I'm glad that you still have that survival is still surviving, which is good to know. But I know you've suffered loss from her father. So Namibia is, I believe, a country that is not really well known to the people in America. Would you agree with that in the short time that you've been with us here? Would you see that really when you mention Namibia, we're not so familiar with the government or the culture?
Yes, I have noticed that. I have realized that. And I'm proud that I'm the first woman peacemaker here
you
in
are.
San Diego
mm-hmm.
from Namibia.
Yes.
And I'm happy that I could mention the name Namibia, the country, of course, that I'm proud of, to make people know that there is a country in the African continent called Namibia.
What should we know as Americans? Yes, you have troubles in your country. Well, we certainly have them in the United States also. What are the most important things for us to know about Namibia and to be aware of and perhaps to raise consciousness about? Is SWAPO and the dungeons the main factor, or are there other issues that we should know of also?
Well, there are other issues. The dungeon issue is the issue that we came back with. I call it the unfinished business of the liberation struggle.
Mm.
That is the baggage that we came back with. But currently the challenges that we have is the education system that is really not so strong. It's not something that we hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
And corruption is also a drive.
Mm.
And of course poverty, half of the population is poor. Unemployment is at rise, but also, there are beautiful things in Namibia. The country itself is very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
We are, I think, the only country where the desert and the ocean meets. We have got two deserts, one on the eastern side and one on the west coast of Africa, the Namib Desert and the Kalahari Desert. And we have got beautiful resorts like the Skeleton Coast, of course. It is beautiful, and there are many more places that Americans can go and see.
So it's a beautiful country.
Witness of themselves that indeed Pauline told the truth, that indeed it's a beautiful country. You would want to go back for the second time.
Oh, really? That's very interesting to hear. You touched on education, Pauline, the fact that that's not where you would like it to be. And Voices of Women, that's our main focus of our mission, is education, especially for women and girls. Could you talk a little bit more about that? What is the school system? Why is it not achieving perhaps the goals that you might envisage for your country?
Mm-hmm. For what I personally think is when we came back from exile, we did not really think, or the people that were entrusted with that did not really give a thorough thought to not just change overnight the system that was existing, but then the system changed, and we had the Cambridge system now, But the problem is that we did not prepare our teachers to take over, because before independence, it was Afrikaans medium. We had the Afrikaans as a medium of instruction, and all of a sudden, teachers have to change to English, which is to start with not their mother tongue, and that in itself was a challenge. So teachers are not able to transfer the knowledge appropriately to the learners. That's for one. And the other is that after a certain age, we had to, especially in grade 10, if you fail grade 10 once, you are not allowed back in school. So these were children of 14, 15 years of age that were on the street that could not imagine, if you cannot make it in a class, how do you make it on your own? So these are some of the things that have really caused our education system to lapse back. But we hope, and also what we have experienced is that the girl child was not encouraged, but recently, maybe with the competition with the Millennium Development Goals and so on, we are kind of reaching there, and we have got more girls that are now in school, which is good. We just need to look at the other loose ends to strengthen our education.
Good. So there is hope for the system, and you're definitely feeling, and there is growth, and with the girls increasing numbers at school, that's promising also. So you will have spent approximately, I think it's 9 weeks at USD, right?
It will be 8 weeks.
8 weeks, I apologise, yes. 8 weeks. I should know that. And your story is being documented while you're here. Has the time here also given you time to think of any new initiatives when you return to Namibia later this year?
Yes, I think I was kind of also on the crossroad when I came here. Mm-hmm. I really was thinking, what more is there to do, and how can I do it? So I had that space to think of that and to reflect also on my work. So in addition to what I do, what I think I need to also do more is to engage with women on alternative to violence. It's something that I have started, but then due to lack of funding and so on, I dropped it somewhere. But I think it's one of the things that are important, that I can also share the experience that I have gained here and also encourage women to be engaged in active nonviolence.
Do you think that women make good leaders? And I want to be wary of not being too biased, but maybe better leaders?
Well, I grew up in a family that really, I did not see the difference between women and men. That's how we were brought up. I will wash the dishes today, my brother will wash the dishes the other day. So I grew up with that kind of equal chores, if you like, for both girls and boys. And I believe in people. And but I know women can be better leaders. Women can, if they are given that the space that they need, and to participate and to deliver, they can do it just as well and even better than what men can do.
I like it, your words, I believe in people. And I think with that, what we will do is conclude this conversation, but again, with enormous thanks to Pauline Dempers of Namibia. And we wish you luck and happiness and peace in your country. Thank you.
Thank you for the space.